We're joining now with Dr. Neil Schrick, the department head and professor and at the University of Tennessee's Animal Science in Knoxville. Dr. Schrick, this is something that you've been doing for a few years in terms of as the department head, I think, since 2011. But you've been at the university a little longer than that.
1994.
Yeah. Tell me when you started and how this all began for you.
Well, I'm from Southwest Oklahoma, so I'm in Oklahoma State, then Clemson, and then West Virginia University. And my family is in agriculture, beef cattle, cotton, wheat, and hay, and so kind of grew up in that area and happened to be at West Virginia University when Dr. Fred Hopkins, who several of us know, was extension vet down here, gave me a call and said, hey, we've got a beef cattle reproductive position open in the department. We want you to apply. And my comment to him was, okay, who's there? And he said, I'm here. And that's all I need to hear, because Fred Hopkins was one of the pioneers in breeding soundness exams and bulls and things of that sort. And I was able to work with Fred for close to 20 years. So again, it was coming to work with Fred was what got me to UT. And plus, they're, you know, it's a beef cattle state, and I was interested in going into a beef cattle state.
And obviously, whatever you did to start out with has kept you here.
Yes.
All these years later. And you've seen a lot of changes over these 28 years. We've been talking a lot of people are talking about all the changes that have happened. But that's a normal thing, because if you go back, I guess, you know, 20 or 30 years before you got there, you know, there were a lot of changes then. So it's just something that a lot of people think that it's this, you know, raising livestock or any kind of science with livestock is the same. But yet it's a lot different over the decades and even over the half century, and especially over the century.
Well, and I'll give two examples. So one is the demographics. So, you know, going to college as a student in the 80s, like I did in 81, most of the students were in animal science were male students. They were farm kids. A few females, but not that many. Most of the female students were interested in pre-veterinary medicine, things of that sort. You look at today, even when I got to Tennessee in the early 90s, it was probably 50-50. And today, you're looking at the majority of animal science students, 80% are female students, and the male students are 20%. And I think it's because of the emphasis in science, especially among the female students and things of that sort, have really kicked it off. And animal science, our second word, is science. And that's really attractive for the female students, especially those wanting to go to med school or vet school, grad school, or anything of that sort. But also think about the beef cattle industry. And I was visiting with a person the other day, and I asked the question, you think about the change in beef cattle since the 60s and 70s when we could put straw in the pen to touch their bellies. And nowadays, and then in the 80s, we had cattle that were so tall and long-legged, we called them daylight sandwiches or daylight cattle because you could see a lot of daylight underneath them, to now back to the modern, more moderate size type animal. But the other thing is the use of genetics that has improved the sustainability of the beef cattle industry. You think about a group that's probably carbon negative, that would be beef cattle and things of that sort. And that's because of the improved genetics, the improved animal health by the producers themselves with veterinarian input and things like that. You're really looking at a progressive industry, and the broiler industry is the same way, dairy industry going to precision livestock. So you're looking at an animal agriculture industry that has been all about sustainability and improvements way longer than what we've ever been talking about recently. It seems like everyone thinks this is something new, and the animal ag industry has been doing this for years.
And the students, you are attracting some more students right now.
Yes.
We're coming, hopefully coming out less of having to deal with all the COVID situations, but and everybody had different numbers at universities and all the last couple of years. But there are now, I think, 600 students in animal science at UT, and that's up significantly from just a year or two ago. And that student, you know, is hopefully going to help define the science, you know, in the next decade or even obviously even further. And that's what this is all about, is that science that's helping to improve this industry that we all know and love.
Yes, and the students, where we saw the big increase wasn't so much in freshmen per se, but it's the junior college transfers. These are the students that when we started the Tennessee Promise, where they could go to a junior college for 2 years and then transfer in. That is the increase. We're seeing it with Pellissippi students, Walter State students, Motlow, those sort of schools, Columbia State, Rome State. Those kids now, they've got their two-year degree, and they're making that decision where they're going to go. And so, you know, that's where we saw the really growth was junior college. And we hadn't been saying, we've been waiting on it. We've been expecting it to come. But I think you see a lot of it now, especially associated with the economy and things of that sort. This is an opportunity to get two more years of schooling, build your career portfolio, make that portfolio for a job look even better. And so, again, it's coming. It's there. And so that's the growth that we saw. I think, you know, during 2020, when COVID was tough and everything, a lot of people, you know, decided to make that decision to do the Tennessee Promise and everything to stay closer to home because no one knew what was going to go on. Now, in fall 2021, we've seen, like I said, that big increase in the Tennessee Promise kids or junior college, which I think that's going to continue to grow and grow and grow. And I think our freshman numbers are going to stay pretty consistent, but I think we'll see the growth there. And I think other schools probably saw similar growth.
And you touched on it. There are going to be a lot more opportunities, and you all are moving forward with the research things that you are doing with livestock. And you mentioned it just briefly previously, was the precision livestock. That's what is kind of where we're headed, right?
Yes.
And you all are all over this and looking at this, but I'm thinking a lot of the general public, what are you talking about, precision livestock farming? Don't you just feed some hay and to a cow, or feed some a little corn to the chickens, and that's all there is, right? They grow and we consume them, right?
Well, and again, when I'm talking about precision livestock farming, that can be in facility designs, that can be in what they're fed, that can be in the type of forages or mixture of forages that are out in the pasture. In a state like Tennessee, where it's mostly fescue with the endophyte, the toxic endophyte in there, we know that we can improve that with clover and things of that sort. But with precision ag, we can also look at the impact of that on water consumption, which is a big deal with sustainability, is water consumption, feeding of other grains and stuff. What's that change? And so if you look at our Middle Tennessee Research and Education Center down here at Spring Hill, you know, we've got the Sealock feeders in there. We've got water measuring where it will measure an individual animal's water intake and things of that sort. And that's one of the things that we also hear from students that come to UT. They want to come to UT Knoxville and be in animal science because they know they're going to be able to work with faculty on research areas, or they're taught by faculty that are experts in that area. I mean, my faculty at Teach Repro, that's all they do. That's all they breathe is repro. Nutrition's the same way. Genetics the same way. That's all they do. And so they're up to date. They don't use textbooks. They use the current research data and everything that's out there. And that's one. And right now, precision livestock is part of that. And it doesn't matter what industry. Swine industry, dairy industry, beef industry, broiler industry, All those are going into this precision livestock because we know that we've got to get sustainable, but to meet current politicians, I guess,
definition
yeah. whatever.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's one of those things that the more data that we have, the more data that we can figure out and make improvements on, the better we'll be able to help future farmers battle this misconception.
And ultimately, it's going to help the consumer.
Yes.
Right? That's the bottom line, is we're going to improve our livestock farming practices. And with the land that we have available, and gosh, we know that that is slipping away more and more every day as we have more population growth, you have to be more sustainable and looking at ways to make this industry sustainable, right? By being precision all the way down to monitoring their weight gain.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been doing that, but this is even more scientific what you're going to be doing going forward.
Oh, the earlier we can determine an animal is having a health effect, or something's affecting their health or something like that, the sooner we can get in there and treat them, the more they're going to be sustainable, maintain their growth and things of that sort. So again, early monitoring for disease, for gain, for water consumption, for energy usage in our facilities, things of that sort, the more we can learn about those, then we can make changes. Look at the amount of beef, the amount of poultry, and things that, and the amount of milk that we produce today compared to the 60s. You know, so we produce as much or more beef today, meat product, with way fewer animals. And it's the same on the broiler industry. It's the same in swine. It's the same in dairy. So we've become very, very efficient, and we've got to get better. Because like you said, the land is turning into
subdivisions,
urban things of that sort. And again, it's just shrinking and shrinking. And again, all the misinformation that's out there about the impact of animal ag on climate change and all that, again, they're not looking at the whole picture. They're looking at what fits their narrative. And what we've got to do is present our narrative, but we need to present our narrative not only to farmers and things like that. We need to present our narrative to politicians, to everyday mom and dad at home, and the children and everything that are going to become the farmers in 20 or 30 years. Look at the demographics, the age of our current farmers. Someone's going to come in and replace them. And there's a quote from Henry Kissinger years and years ago. And for those who don't know who Henry Kissinger is, he was Secretary of State during the Nixon years. But he talked about, you know, if you want a army to surrender very, very quickly, remove food. And it's the same thing. Do we want our food to be dependent upon coming from overseas? We need to be dependent upon producing our own food. Otherwise, anyone who wants the United States to collapse, surrender, or whatever, block the ports, bring in no food or anything, and we're going to quit. So we need to keep that in mind, that food production is not only food security, but it's national security.
Without a doubt. And obviously, with your faculty now, a current faculty at the Department of Animal Science, I think you say the average age of faculty is 42 years
42.
Old, and I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought that it would have been much higher, more in terms of how old the average age of a farmer is, which we know is approaching 60, or if not already 60. So that says a lot in itself, that you're attracting and getting faculty, younger faculty in there to, and not that there's anything wrong with older faculty,
right.
but you have to, you know, continue to, as faculty retire, you want to bring in new folks with this idea of being able to use this science to sustain all of us.
Oh, and the turnover, every department sees this at different times. And so if you think about animal science, and it used to be animal husbandry, one of the oldest majors that there was in agriculture. the turnover. And animal science is just basically we're on this turnover, and it's not a consistent turnover. You know, again, in the early 80s, mid-80s, animal science at UT Knoxville had a big hiring, and those folks stayed around for 30, 35, David Kirkpatrick, 47 years, things of that sort. And now those are turning over, and we're hiring, again, a bunch of young faculty members, but young faculty members that are very much agriculture-related, not intentional. We go out to hire the best, and those best happen to be farm kids, and farm kids have very good work ethics, which makes great faculty. And so, again, when you look at our faculty and everything, and how many of them grew up on a farm, grew up in 4-H, grew up in FFA and everything, they've got great work ethic, and that's what makes great grad students, and that's what makes great faculty. I mean, if you want to get tenure in today's environment, there's no such thing as a 40-day week. It's more like a 160-day week or 160-hour week. And so, again, it's one of those things that our kids, again, through 4-H and FFA, have that work ethic. And that's why I purposely try to go out and get the best 4-H'ers and FFA kids that I can, because they make great animal science students.
Well, we know there's going to be always a need to continue using the science to look at our food supply and how we feed this growing population, and not only efficiently, but in the right way. I mean, in a safe science type way, and that's what you're doing.
Well, and recognize the United States, we spend less on food on a per capita basis than any other country. Our food is cheap. Now, people are saying, oh, no, you haven't been to the grocery store lately. Food is really, really high. But based upon a percentage of our income, food is still relatively inexpensive in the United States. It's going to continue to go up. And so one of the things that we have to do is continue to make sure that our industry is sustainable, economical, both for the producer. The producer needs to make money. The consumer needs to be able to save money. We've got to work that balance on both ways. And so it's one of the hardest things to get done, but we've got to keep that in mind as we employ more precision livestock type things. What we're trying to do there is minimize inputs by the producers and maximize outputs. And that way, you know, as we all know from farming, it's one of the few things that we pay retail, but we sell everything wholesale. It's one of those things we've got to learn to keep those costs down. And precision livestock farming science is going to help us do that. But we need the kids that will appreciate and understand and go back and use it. And that's what we're always looking for. And that's those 4-H kids and FFA kids.
All right. Dr. Neil Schrick, our guest from the department head and professor at the University of Tennessee Department of Animal Science. Dr. Schrick, thank you.
I appreciate it. And anytime you've got a question about animal science, you got a question about wanting to come to school in animal science in UT Knoxville or whatever, give me a call. If I don't answer the phone, my better half, Dr. Lynette Edwards, will. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Schrick.